From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gustina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Coming up this week, State Assembly Speaker Hastie tours North Country manufacturing plants that supply subway and bus cars to New York City. Our political observer Alan Shartok shares his thoughts on two potential new challengers to Governor Andrew Cuomo in 2018, and U.S. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer calls for the federal government to help in the battle against insect-borne disease. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. New York's Assembly Speaker Carl Hastie was in the North Country to tour transportation manufacturing plants that supply subway and bus cars to New York City. Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley was there and caught up with the Bronx Democrat.
The Assembly Speaker traveled to Plattsburgh, where state-of-the-art manufacturing plants are building buses and subway cars. Following a tour of Bombardier's plant, Nova Bus Prevo plant manager Jason Martin showed off a completed bus.
This is 100% electric. We then have a compressed natural gas powered. You'll see a few around New York City, compressed natural gas. And then we also have a diesel powered powertrain. And then we have combinations of those powertrains, just like you would see a hybrid car. So this is a typical we've sold into New York City, about 1,000 buses.
Martin explained that the Plattsburgh facility employs about 500 people to supply buses to transit authorities across the country, including the MTA.
We don't just recognize the fact that we employ about 500 people here locally in Plattsburgh, but we have 102 other New York State suppliers, so with New York State addresses that supply us with components. So for every one job we create, there's about five additional add-on jobs throughout the state that really support the state's economy.
115th District Assemblyman D. Billy Jones, a Democrat, noted that the North Country region has a high-quality transportation manufacturing cluster providing products to the MTA.
We look forward to the opportunity to keep fostering that relationship as well. And we want to provide high-quality products to places throughout New York State in metropolitan areas. And I think by being here today, the speaker is showing that commitment as well. We need transportation in New York, in the metropolitan areas, and it provides a strong economy here in the North Country.
Hastie, who is continuing a statewide tour he began shortly after becoming speaker, says the local manufacturing cluster illustrates how the upstate and downstate economies are linked.
This right here shows that the city can't thrive without upstate New York, and upstate New York needs New York City as well. So I continue to say that we're one big happy family in the state of New York, and I think people should look more at these kind of examples of how the city is dependent on parts of upstate New York, and part of upstate New York's economy is thriving because of the city of New York. And those are the things we should be talking about, the things that bring us together and shows how much we need each other than the things that separate us just because we're a couple of hundred miles away from each other.
Town of Plattsburgh Supervisor Michael Cashman was excited to have the speaker visit.
It's about that cross-pollination of our economies, downstate and upstate, really have a shared interest. Plattsburgh really is a magnet in many respects from people all over the globe, all over the country, from downstate to upstate. And he's recognizing and speaking about how our economies are intertwined, and that's a really exciting thing to hear.
Speaker Hastie also toured Norsk Titanium and met with SUNY Plattsburgh Educational Opportunity Program students before taking a boat tour of Lake Champlain. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. Alan, this week we learned of two potential new challengers to Governor Andrew Cuomo coming up in 2018. One a Democrat, one a Republican, but both from Syracuse, New York. We're talking about, first, the mayor, Democrat Stephanie Miner, who was once a co-chair of the party.
Well, yeah, and she had the guts to disagree with Andrew Cuomo, and now she isn't the co-chair of the party. Hey, look, this is a gutsy woman. She's very, very bright. She defies the logic of the Democratic Party, which is that you can't win a primary if you're not from the five boroughs or from immediately outside of the five boroughs unless you're a Democrat. So here she is from Syracuse. On the other hand, Andrew Cuomo is extraordinarily unpopular in upstate New York. His own numbers are sinking like a rock. We all know his most trusted colleagues are now on trial for grafting. And a third term is always a very difficult proposition for any governor. So it's all sort of mounting up against him, and he knows it. On the other hand, he has, I think, something like $27 million in the bank to run for. That's a lot of money. On the other hand, Ms. Teachout did very, very well against him in a campaign in which she had virtually no money, and that was 4 years ago. So now we have Stephanie Miner ready to go if she goes, and there will be a lot of people in New York City who will like her candidacy. After all, who knew who Barack Obama was? If somebody comes down and they campaign and the opponent is unpopular, then they have a very good shot. By no means is it sure that she's going to run. She doesn't sound to me like a candidate who is going to do it, but she's watching his polls as everybody else is. Now, on the other side, on the Republican side, you have Senator DeFrancisco, who is the number two guy in the state Senate, almost was the number one guy, clearly has political ambition, is a conservative, will run against Cuomo if he has the chance. On the other hand, there's always the question of what happens to his Senate seat. And, you know, he's a powerful man. Do you give up something like that and a leadership role in order to run for the state's highest office? Maybe. Maybe you do. But in any case, he's an upstater. I think if I'm Andrew Cuomo, I'm on the side of my bed praying that he's the candidate. I don't think he's going to have the kind of backing in progressive New York that you would need to be a governor. On the other hand, I didn't think George Pataki could win either.
On the national scene, of course, we witnessed the what seems to be at least somewhat of a failure when it comes to replacing Obamacare and a call for bipartisanship to work out the problems associated with it. But in New York, we have Representative Collins, we have Representative Faso and Stefanik, and those are the ones who supported the amendment that the president, as you've pointed out, called part of a mean bill. And to that end, the impact.
Well, David, they are, I am sure, rueing the day that this health care thing ever came up, because Trump really did pull the rug right out from under them. They showed tremendous support for him, even though they didn't have to. And as a result, the bill went down no matter what, and they are left having an awful lot of people very angry at them. I thought it was a big mistake on both Stefanik and Faso's part to do that. And as a result, they are vulnerable in this election. Of that, there is no question. These are basically Republican districts. Don't kid yourself. People say they're toss-ups. They're not. The Republicans have an edge. On the other hand, especially in a district like Faso's, it is going towards the Democratic side as people move in, as places like Ulster and Dutchess and Columbia County begin to become more and more laden with Democrats. And in, as far as Stefanik's district, which is, of course, is upstate, as upstate as you can get without being Canadian, we saw that a Blue Dog Democrat became the congressman for years before Stefanik got there, meaning that he was a fairly conservative Democrat, Owens, but he did, in fact, get reelected. And so it's a district that can, under the right circumstances, with the right impetus, change. And with Trump's unpopularity and with their hanging on to Trump the way they have been, I don't see that they're not in danger.
Governor Andrew Cuomo this week said a measure that would hinder the carrying out of a controversial gun control law in New York, that's the SAFE Act, on the federal level, would be challenged. The bill is backed by one of the representatives we just spoke about, Representative Chris Collins, Republican from Western New York, of course, locked in this antagonistic relationship with the governor over health care, and now the SAFE Act, Alan.
Well, The SAFE Act upstate is extraordinarily unpopular. It's one of the gutsiest and most important things that Andrew Cuomo ever did. It was a profile in courage. He's a smart guy. He knew he was going to get pushback. But after Sandy Hook and after the murder of those wonderful small children and what happened with their parents and their community in Connecticut, he did the right thing. And as a result, there are signs all over upstate New York, which is to repeal that SAFE Act. So it's a safe thing for an upstate bully boy to come out with, even though the idea of defending these guns, which are so terrible, is so reprehensible, but they do it because it's politically right for them. It was a gutsy move on Cuomo's part. He knew what was going to happen, and it has happened.
Finally, Alan, Senator Kirsten Gillibrand was in Queens at an event when an audience member characterized the IDC, the Independent Democratic Caucus, as appalling for engaging in a power-sharing agreement with Republicans in the state Senate, and Gillibrand agreed. The audience erupted with applause when she said, "I don't support the IDC. The state elected a Democratic state Senate. We should have a Democratic Senate." The IDC responded, Alan, unbowed, and carped back at Gillibrand, suggesting its pact with the GOP allowed for passage of more left-of-center legislation than she had in the nation's polarized capital. "Washington is in total disarray," a spokesperson said. "We would be happy to share with her the way the IDC has managed to deliver marriage equality, two minimum wage increases, and paid family leave in a bipartisan manner so she can get it done on a national level."
And what else did they do? You know, I mean, they can point to these signature agreements, which Governor Cuomo, by the way, is counting on to get him through the next election. He says that's his doing. They say the IDC, that it's theirs. I've always called these people the traitors, because basically what they did, guys like Jeff Klein from the Bronx, the leader of the group, proclaiming himself a progressive Democrat and making sure that the Republicans stay in office. And that's what he's done. And that's what they've done. For a few pounds of silver or a few pieces of silver, some positioning, they get to be in charge. And I have to say, the governor has something to say about this. He has some real responsibility. You know, if that governor said to them, "I'm going to run primary opponents against you if you don't come around and get back where you belong with the Democrats, you will be out of office." But no, he, and I have to say my old friend, his father, really preferred having the Republicans in charge, because that way it would sort of tamp down the Democratic impulses to spend too much, and they wouldn't have had to be the bad guys. The Cuomos have always wanted the Republicans in charge, I believe.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Once infected with Lyme disease himself, U.S. Senate Minority Leader Charles Schumer was in Albany this week to urge the federal government to continue the battle against insect-borne diseases. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas was there and filed this report.
Speaking at Albany Medical Center, Schumer called tick-borne diseases one of the greatest dangers that we face now. He cited data from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, which detailed 288 cases of Lyme disease in Albany County and 8,272 across New York State in 2015.
It happened to me. I was inspecting dams in the Hudson Valley several years ago, but I was educated, and I knew that this telltale bullseye that was on my calf might be trouble. I pulled the little tick off, put it in a plastic bag, and went the next day to the doctor. Sure enough, I had Lyme disease.
The Democrat received immediate treatment and was cured. He says almost everyone knows somebody who has had Lyme disease that was misdiagnosed, underscoring the need for early detection. He noted that deer ticks are linked to the Powassan virus, which is deadlier than Lyme. He pointed to the case of one of his colleagues, former North Carolina U.S. Senator Kay Hagan.
She couldn't walk or talk or do anything, and for 6 months at the best hospitals, they couldn't diagnose it. Finally, they found out it's Powassan. She's just gradually learning now to recognize people and to get up out of a chair.
Schumer went on to call tick-borne diseases one of the greatest dangers facing upstate New Yorkers. The purpose of the visit was to urge the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services to double down on efforts to fully implement new laws passed by Congress last year, that Schumer's office says will significantly increase research, vaccine development, and treatment.
In 2016, the first two cases were diagnosed of Powassan. This year, another three cases in Albany, Warren, and Rensselaer counties.
Catherine Duncan is the public health director in Saratoga County, where three recent cases of Powassan have been documented. One person died.
These particular infections are so preventable if you do the right steps, if you make sure that you're following everything that the CDC recommends with regards to protecting yourself. And we do appreciate that additional research will hopefully be down the way for us.
Schumer vowed to use every means at his disposal to get the federal government to aggressively implement the new laws. There's more at WAMC.org.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency this week classified a facility in the Rensselaer County village of Hoosick Falls as a federal superfund. As officials digested the news, the Legislative Gazette's Lucas Willard reports on what the designation means and what may be coming next.
On Monday, the EPA acted on what many Hoosick Falls residents have been hoping for ever since the chemical PFOA was found in drinking water there. The Saint-Gobain Performance Plastics plant on McCaffrey Street has been named a federal superfund. Deemed a state superfund in January 2016, the site has been linked to the PFOA contamination in private wells and the municipal water plant. Last month, two additional sites in the village were also classified as state superfunds. PFOA is believed to be a carcinogen and has been linked to ill health effects. Saint-Gobain, along with Honeywell, has been cooperating with the state under a consent agreement. Hundreds of point-of-entry treatment systems have been installed on private wells. A permanent filtration system is now on the village water supply. The New York State Department of Environmental Conservation has submitted to the companies a study regarding finding a new uncontaminated water supply. On a visit to Albany on Monday, U.S. Senator Charles Schumer called EPA adding Hoosick Falls to the national priorities list the best solution to the contamination issue.
What does it mean? It means very simply one thing, that the companies that created this mess are now legally forced to clean it up.
New York State recommended Hoosick Falls for federal Superfund status in January 2016, shortly before the state issued its own Superfund declaration. New York has already begun what's called a remedial investigation and feasibility study. EPA Region 2 Acting Deputy Administrator Walter Mugden said the federal agency will review New York's work, but that state and federal requirements are similar.
We'll see if there are any specific elements of this study that might have to be a little bit adjusted or augmented to satisfy the federal as well as the state requirements. We'll work closely with the state of New York to make sure that those additional elements are then included in the study. And when the study is completed and the time comes to make a remedy selection, we will, of course, work very closely with the state in doing that.
Mugden said when both government and state agencies work together, it's beneficial, and he anticipated that would be the case in Hoosick Falls. New York State Department of Environmental Conservation spokesman Sean Mahar said the agency has been in communication with and will continue to meet with EPA as it seeks to hold polluters accountable and locate a clean water source.
A lot of these efforts are underway by the state, and we'll make sure that we're coordinating closely with our federal partners as these efforts continue.
Hoosick Falls Mayor Rob Allen said he was happy to see EPA come on board, but did express some reservations that he said are shared across the community about high-profile resignations in the agency under the Trump administration.
There's always that concern, but, you know, I was able to meet with EPA. I asked for a meeting in early July, and we had one, last week, actually. They came up to Hoosick Falls. It was a really good meeting, a lot of good conversations. They explained a lot. So, for the people who I've met with, I'm very glad and excited to have them on board.
Allen said he's looking forward to the possible facilitation of a community advisory group for the federal Superfund. EPA facilitates independent CAGs to give local stakeholders a place for input during the decision-making process. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Lucas Willard.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. And finally, as part of New York State Assembly Speaker Carl Hastie's trip to the North Country that we reported on in the beginning of the program, he also showed a different side of himself on his tour when the lifelong Star Trek fan visited a museum that replicates the fictional Starship Enterprise. Karen DeWitt was there to see it.
This is amazing.
It's a Trekkie's dream to sit in Captain Kirk's chair, stand on a transporter pod, hold an actual communicator prop from the television show. New York's Assembly Speaker Carl Hastie got to do all of that when he visited the Star Trek Set Tour Museum in Ticonderoga as part of a trip to New York's North Country.
I feel like I'm 10 years old again.
Hastie, who's 49, wasn't yet alive when the original version of the series premiered in 1966. But the rerun certainly captured his imagination.
So I guess I was probably in the late 70s when I was maybe 10 or 11. I was always into science and technology, and it's just amazing a lot of the things that they did, like the communicators. It's like the cell phones now, so they were really ahead of their time, so I think that's why I was so into it.
So we were thrilled to find out that you were a big Trek fan.
Hastie, who is not a publicly demonstrative person, smiled and seemed captivated as he politely asked question after question of tour guide James Cawley. The Star Trek set tour is a lifelong dream for Cawley. He grew up in Ticonderoga, a village between Lake George and Lake Champlain that includes the historic Fort Ticonderoga. He left to travel widely with jobs, including working as an Elvis impersonator, something that he still does, and he wears his hair in a styled black pompadour to prove it. The museum does not, of course, have the actual set from the show. That was destroyed shortly after the series ended in the late 1960s. No one thought it would ever be valuable. Cawley has painstakingly reconstructed the bridge, sick bay, and the engineering station, among other iconic sets, by closely analyzing the tapes of the original shows and consulting with dedicated fans.
Star Trek fans have an eye for detail, and if you get it wrong, they're going to let you know it. And so we try to avoid that. We want this place to be absolutely perfect. When they step through there, it's a time machine. We want them to feel like, oh my gosh, I'm in an episode. You know, I'm on the starship. That was the goal.
He estimates it cost hundreds of thousands of dollars to put it all together, though he's had plenty of help from friends and relatives. He's received no aid from the state. Hastie says the show, which was known for its ahead-of-its-time political and social themes, taught him some life lessons that he uses in politics, running the 150-member assembly, dealing with Governor Andrew Cuomo and leaders of the state Senate.
They always wanted to have a peaceful discourse with any place that they went. It really is about relationships and staffing relationships. So you can learn things from some of these shows. And like I said, my favorite quote is from the movie when we talk about particularly tax policy, when I say the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few or the one.
That quote from Spock in the 1982 movie Wrath of Khan. Hastie says Kirk, though, remains his favorite character. Other well-known politicians have been Star Trek fans, including former President Ronald Reagan and General Colin Powell. Cawley says there's a reason for that.
Pretty simple. Star Trek is very optimistic. It is a bright vision of tomorrow, and it says that no matter what our differences are, we're all going to come together, and we're all going to put that stuff aside, and we're going to have a better tomorrow.
It was not originally Cawley's specific intention to help his economically depressed hometown, but he says he's happy if the Star Trek set tour brings in more visitors. He's already had 7,000 people come since opening in April, and several of the former stars of the show will be visiting in late August. Speaker Hastie agrees.
I hope it does for here what I'd say the Baseball Hall of Fame does for Cooperstown.
After all, he says, there are a lot of Star Trek fans. In Ticonderoga, I'm Karen DeWitt.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1731, or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.